So I was talking with a friend of mine about family, and today I want to talk about the trial of Jesus Christ from the Roman Empire perspective. And I just want to talk about it because I have been always had this idea in my mind. When I studied law school, one of my favorite classes was the Roman law, or Derecho Romano. And I, as I mentioned to you guys before, I had a love for theology since I was maybe 8 years old. I felt, for me, God, he was the best thing that ever happened. And I wanted to learn about it. So I started learning about Jesus and theology. And when I got to the study of Roman law, I was a big theologist in my 20s. So I started analyzing the trial of Jesus from the Roman Empire perspective. And Jesus was 33 years old, and obviously he was born under the Roman Empire. And as I can tell by the history, he studied the Roman laws and studied deeply, because the Romans were more into the human rights. It didn't matter who you were. If you were a citizen of Rome, you would have rights. Even though you had money or not, you were an entity full of rights. So it's really interesting when you start thinking about the knowledge Jesus Christ had and also the love he had for Jewish traditions and Jewish law. And you see, they say Jesus is one of the first human rights defender. And you see it through the books. But that's why, in a way, I do believe the existence of this entity that we call Jesus, or Yeshua HaMashiach, it did really existed in the history because of his trial. If you start reading the trial of Jesus Christ in the Bible, it shows you some interesting points about how the Roman Empire ruled and how the Jewish Empire or Jewish traditions through their own individuals was built. And it's interesting when Caesar says, I don't see anything that you did wrong according to the Roman law. And honestly, it was not a sin committed by Jesus, or a norm broken by Jesus under the Roman Empire, because he didn't do anything. He was, even the Caesar was saying, I mean, you have the right to speak your mind because you are an entity of freedom of speech. And the freedom of speech, it was also allowed in Rome. You know, it was not a sin. So then it's interesting, because according to the Jews, Jesus was crucified. The biggest blasphemy that Jesus did, it was say that I will destroy the temple and I will build it back in 3 days. And that was one of the biggest sins or that the Jews had their right to kill people. It was because of traditions and their own thinking. But for the Romans, the freedom of speech, it was nothing. You know, it was not a broken of rule. So it's interesting when you see the competence of the Roman Empire, that it created a big damage for the society. I think that was one of the pillars how the system started getting broken, by allowing traditions or allowing traditions that are not based in norms to judge. So basically what happened in that state, it was when Caesar gives the letter to the Jews, he was delivering the competence for them to judge Jesus. And the Roman Empire, what I did like about what I learned, it was that when Caesar gives or throws the letter, right, it gives them the power to judge them. And that it created a big mess for the Roman Empire. Because that's when they did apply what the populace wanted. It's not my laws, it's what the populace wanted. And that's when it created differences. When they realize they open a window by judging people by their beliefs and their culture and everything. But then the Roman Empire broke the rules to benefit the populace. And then they delivered Jesus to the Jews for him to be judged according to the traditions of the Judaism. And that's why they say, okay, you know, we're going to judge him. We don't see trial. I'm going to wash my hands. So that's the episode for me as a law, as a student of law, when I was seeing both. I was in love of the Bible a lot, about Jesus' life more than any other life. But also I do like Proverbs a lot and Psalms and Song of Songs and John, all the apostles. But there are interesting books. Anyways, so when I studied Roman law, I did notice those things about Jesus' life. That he, you know, he was someone that I will say he learned the beauty of the Roman law. And he saw how his religion and his city, his background, he was not following anymore the laws according to the Judaism, were less in favor than the Roman laws. And Jesus was someone who adapts the Roman laws and says these are better laws than the Judaism. You know, you see it in so many different aspects. Even when his people start stoning the girl, that is, she was a prostitute. That's another example of the Roman laws. The Roman laws, the Caesars and the Romans were really promiscuous, and they had sex with whoever they wanted, as far as it was somebody who, I think, a pedophile, it was not well seen, because the Romans had a lot of care for their own individuals, but I'm not completely sure about that. But what I want to say is that the prostitute in the Roman Empire, it was not a big deal. Prostitution, it was a career as other ones, you know. And even they did respect everybody who was Roman with their own rights. So that's why when Jesus stopped people from stoning the prostitute, it was because they were under the Roman Empire as well. So he's like, wait a minute, you guys can't do that anymore. You cannot stone this girl. She has rights. And that's why he was a lawyer, you know, he was a human lawyer. It was exactly because of that. So it's really interesting to see Jesus Christ as his legal knowledge of his rights and how far he can go. And you see his own people getting threatened, getting hurt, and getting obsessed and upset about him fighting for his rights, to protecting and even protecting others and telling them, no, wait a minute, you guys cannot go this far because we have rights. But at the end, you know, you saw the Roman Empire falling, but it has to do with that situation. Like I remember reading in the Smithians about Jesus Christ, and they used to say, well, we cannot for certain say that Jesus existed, but we can say the Christian movement totally existed. And that was the Christian movement. The Christian movement, it was these people who now know their laws, their rights, and it's the beginning of mixing between the Judaism and Roman Empire. So it existed that situation where they were chased by their own people, and they were chased by the Romans. But I don't really understand why the Romans start chasing Christians so much. I believe maybe it was because they were bringing maybe too much commotion in their populace, in their citizens, maybe. But then, as far as history tells, Christians start becoming slaves and you know, fighting for their rights and fighting in the circus. And after that, I feel like when the Roman Empire start falling and Paul, who is the writer of all the letters in the New Testament, he was one of the main leaders of the Roman Empire. And then he became apparently Christian. But a lot of Christians, a lot of the 12 apostles, all of them got killed. But then in between them, they call Paul the first spy in the Christianism. It's really interesting because they say Peter has the first pope, but Peter died really fast, crucified. But then Paul stayed. He became one of the main ones for the new order of the Catholic Empire. And it's interesting because the Catholic Empire, they are ruled by the canonic law, not the Judaism or not the Roman Empire. They create a new one called the canonic one. So that became the new order. And then once I feel like Christians got divided by Martin Luther in Germany, that's when the Christianity started splitting. That's when the new creation of the separation between religion and state starts. And after the division between the three organs of the state, you know, you cannot have what we see now. Now we see four organs of the state: the media, the judicial, the state, and the executive. They should be supposed to be apart and not linked together, but now we see them all working together. Maybe it was supposed to be like that, but now we see it more infiltrated, more dominant, that perspective. In El Salvador, for example, we do have more separations of power, we call it, where the executive cannot and should not tell who will be the next judge, who cannot appoint judges, cannot appoint senators. You know, it should be different people from different background, from different ethnicity, from different political views to create this new government that is impartial. More the judges. The judges shouldn't be appointed by any government executive, because it shouldn't. The judges should be impartial. Shouldn't, in the Roman times, the judges were supposed to be more impartial, but you could see, you know, all the tendons. We're still the same. But anyways, I wanted to speak about Jesus. I don't know, I was talking with a friend of mine about the Roman Empire, and I finished talking about this. And I said, you know what, I'm going to talk about it. That I always had it in my mind. Always. I remember when I was studying law school, I thought about, should I will talk about in my class. I was learning about punitive laws, you know, punitive laws, and how we have changed the style of punishment through history. Now we probably will go to the psychiatric methods of managing punishment. And that's why I think we're heading where people that are in jail, instead of seeing it as a punishment, we're going to see it as a rehab, psychiatric punishment, or not even punishment, healing. But the scary part now, I feel like, is this new methods that they are trying to do, and some are, you know, let's give people in jail just a reset, and they do these electric procedures that erase your brain. I don't know how good is that. I have my own thoughts about it, but I believe we will see different aspects of punishment now. I feel like some should be lethal. I don't even think there is a way sometimes to fix a really broken person by society. But, well, we are where we are. I just wanted to have this podcast about Roman laws. That was one of my fascinating classes, I think. And also that there was another class that I had with this Italian amazing teacher. He was the most, I think that's when I discovered sapiosexual. There was this handsome guy, Italian guy, who was my teacher in El Salvador, and he was, his name, I'm sorry, but I will say it, his name is Ennio Giulietti, and he was really attractive guy. I was in my 20s, early 20s, and he was this, I don't know, 45, 50 guy, handsome, attractive, but physically really, really handsome. But above it, it was his mind. He was this amazing guy who knew so much about Plato and Homer and all these books about politics, about humankind, about human development. He used to talk about the Ciudad del Sole, you know, about the Leviathan and Thomas Hobbes. Oh, I mean, he was an impressive mind. And I remember going to his classes, just sitting down and being like, wow, you're more than handsome. You're just amazingly smart, sexy, you know. And I remember we had this amazing class about him. And he was saying, you know, in the ideal world, you know, these people that become wealth, right? You see all these millionaires in life. And he used to tell us, like, what do you think? Do you think a homeless doesn't have rights? He does have rights. He doesn't have money, but he has rights. And he used to say how, what do you think is happiness, right? Well, what it makes people happy? You know, a millionaire, right? A millionaire can have $1 million. Like Elon Musk now. Elon can go around the street, go to the best fancy restaurants, sit down in the restaurant, eat his food. But if he sees a homeless outside, it will hurt him. It will bring him maybe upset, maybe disgust, maybe sadness. So he was talking about the impact of society around us and us in that. And he mentioned how you can have $1 million, but if the person in front of you is unhappy, it can bring unhappiness to you. And you see people buying their own island, right? Staying away from society. But at the end, that's not happiness. You know, so that's what I'm saying. Where are we heading? Where are we heading? I was talking to this person who made me think about my mind before, and I say, well, in my ideal world, you know, you will get pregnant, you will get $10 million. You become rich by having a kid. So the blessing is a blessing to the world. And then you will say, oh, I want to work, maybe I want to stay at home taking care of my baby. And I will take care of him maybe 5 years, maybe 10 years, I don't know. Let me discover how much I love maternity. Let me discover if I want to be a successful worker. And the government will say, yeah, sure, we will protect you. We're here to save you. We're here to help you to succeed the most. Your pursuit of happiness, right? Your article, your first right, even the Constitution of U.S. says your pursuit of happiness. Because the government should protect you for your pursuit, for you to pursue happiness. And that's the idea. So I'll say, well, you know, I feel like I want to work. You want to work? You want to leave your baby? Yeah, I want to continue my job. Okay, from day one, we're going to give you a nurse who takes care of your baby. And you have free daycare or whatever. Don't worry about it. You know, you go work, become somebody successful. We're going to take care of him and protect him and be the best for his own pursuit of happiness. And I was telling her how in Sweden, the women that just had babies, they get paid for 2 years, I believe. And she was like, what? I cannot believe it. And I said, yeah, you know, it's just your concept of having kids and the concept of the society of having kids, what it shows. But in other countries, no. And maybe we can find countries that are even better for their own people. Wealth, best. So it will be a different world. And I said to her, right now, even the statistics as females, I would say has been violated. Because we don't really ask what women want. And I can talk about successful females now, you know, like, and, or millionaires, I would say. For example, we were talking about Kim Kardashian, how much money she had made. And, you know, you see her having all these material things. Having her kids, she always wanted to be a mom. She became a mom. And she has so many employees around her. And can she continue succeeding as a mother, as a everything? She has everything. She doesn't need to ask anybody. But still, there are some areas in her life that might not make her feel complete. Who knows? Maybe she's complete now. But I'm saying that's one in a trillion of people that live in this world. And I don't know. I feel the voice of females now are getting again in a point of zero possibilities that we see a lot of females like, oh yeah, we can do this. I want to be empowered. I want to be a successful female. But there are a lot of people that just want to be mothers and stay at home and take care of their babies and be a good mother for their babies. And that percentage has been quiet. That percentage, nobody sees it. Like I was talking to my friend and I said, imagine how many less domestic violence we will have if mothers get paid for staying at home, taking care of the babies. That is one of the best things in the world, is for mothers to take care of their babies till they are minimum 5 is the best thing you can give to your cub, is taking care of them. Who better than mothers, and to take care of them. And if even mothers get paid, I don't understand this world, you know. The government gives so much help to nonprofits for them to take care of your baby. But they don't, there is, here in US, you don't see giving females that have been staying at home with their babies to get paid. It's a big help for the government. It's a big support for them to have the mothers with their babies. And that's why society is just so broken right now. You know, the Roman Empire. The Roman Empire will do whatever they can to have a Roman citizen strong. And that's what it made Rome so strong, according to history, was that fact of, first, we're Romans, you know, and we made a slave whoever we beat up. That was the Roman Empire, you know. We go, we conquer. Vini, vidi, vici, right? We conquer, and we succeed. And the people that we conquer, if we don't want to kill them, they became our slaves. So all these ideas of slavery, sometimes it was because of their own people, made people a slave. I remember in my DNA, I got some percentage of Senegal, and I went to look at Senegal. So there was this lady, she was like the queen of Senegal, and she had a house of slaves. And she was African owner of slaves, and she had so many people there, a slave, and she used to sell the slaves to the rest of the world. So sometimes it was because of the war also. We see it in history books where they came, they conquer, they succeed, and then everything that was around them that they wanted, they took. And the people they kill, or they became slaves. So we are in this episode right now as well. There is a new empire that is taking over, and that's what the empire does. They come, they conquer, and they kill or enslave people. But that's what I wanted just to, I don't know, this came a little crazy topic, but I just wanted to create a podcast about, I thought about writing about it. Maybe I'll write about it later, more slowly. But that's what I had in my mind, and I wanted to express it to you guys. And thank you for listening. Bye.